We had some issues with our recording at the beginning of our Insight show tonight. We now join the show a few minutes into our talk with Mercer County Sheriff Doug Timmerman.
An administrative assistant that takes care of a lot of my documentation that I have to do, sets up all my scheduling. We have a fiscal officer that runs our very large budget. So, you know, that's all got to be done perfectly. And then, you know, everybody sees the sheriff's office and they think of the black and gold cars out there driving around. If we are full staffed in enforcement, which we currently are not, and it has been a while since we have been full staff in enforcement, but we do have a couple people that are currently in the academy that we have basically given conditional offers of employment to. So they should be done in the next month or so, and we'll have them, and then we'll have to do some training with them on our site as well. But if you do those people on the road, that's usually 15 cars that we have an enforcement. So that puts five people on day shift, five on afternoons, and five on midnights. Now understand that that's not five cars out all the time, because those deputies all have different days off throughout the week. So at any given time, we try not to have anything less than two cars out. Generally speaking, it's a good day if we got three cars per shift running, if that makes sense. Because you got their days off that, you know, they all get throughout the week as well.
Now, if they're on, are they always out, or do they have paperwork and things like that at the office they have before or after?
Yeah,
there's
a lot of paperwork that has to be done. And they can do the majority of that stuff in their car. But if you've got to, like, say, download body camera footage or download cruiser camera footage or download the photos you took at a crash scene or log evidence into the evidence room, eventually they got to get back to the office to get that done. But the simple typing of the report can all be done on their computers in their cars. So, and then, you know, you have like 20 corrections officers, okay? And they work 12-hour shifts. So if this makes sense, we have two day shift platoons. So when you're working a 12-hour shift from 7A to 7P, then, you know, they work 2 days in a row. Then the other day shift works 2 days in a row. So they're rotating their days off as well. And then we have obviously two midnight shifts. And there's usually five corrections officers assigned to each platoon. That's if we're full staff, which we currently are as of today. Okay. You know, then we got a clerk in the jail that takes care of a lot of the inmate billing on the medical side, on the financial side, does a lot of the record stuff. That's one thing when you're talking earlier about, you know, things that kind of shocked me as sheriff is all of the records requests that come into our office. So then we also have a civil division, two people assigned to the courthouse for security. We have a transport deputy, a DARE officer, a clerk in there that takes care of all the public records requests, CCWs, sex offenders, arson offenders, and stuff like that. And then, you know, we got four ladies that clean our building and also cook, because obviously you have to provide three meals a day to the inmates. Yeah. So they, part of their duties is they cook and then they go clean, you know, so that's a cook custodial staff that we have there as well. And then dispatch has nine dispatchers. If we're full staff, which I think the last lady that we have just got what we call solo release, that she can dispatch by herself here this week. So that put us at our nine that we needed. So that puts three dispatchers a shift again, understanding that at least one of them are going to be on their days off.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So at any given time, there's two dispatchers that are on duty.
That's the general rule we try to stay with, minus somebody taking vacation or somebody got sick or whatever. We like to keep two of them in there. And I actually, be honest with you, Jack, I thought about this on the way down here tonight. Dispatch is such a unique animal that, you know, the other day when them storms blew into town with the wind, we ended up having six dispatchers into work and it wasn't enough. It wasn't. But then there are days, especially like specifically on midnight shift, where you have two dispatchers there and they may not get a call for 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, but then you have that. So you just, it's hard to find that balancing, but we have a great staff in the aspect of when they know the storms are coming or they're paying attention and they know it's serious, they just come to work and, you know, maybe help out for 15 minutes, staff hour. They may be there for 3 or 4 hours, you know? So just like the other day, we happened to hit that damaging time period right at shift change. It was getting close to three. So the dispatchers on day shift, and obviously they didn't leave, and the ones coming in. And then, you know, like Candy Bacher, who is the financial lady, and Ashley Carr, who's my administrative assistant, they were former dispatchers. So that's what's nice about an agency our size. When they knew it got busy, they just went down there and helped them.
And Candy worked at the License Bureau, didn't she?
Nope, that's a different Candy Bacher.
That's a different
Candy. It's the same, yep, same name, spelled a little bit different. But yes, yeah, exactly.
Now, remember that name.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so our Candy Bacher, she was formerly a dispatcher and then became the fiscal officer after several years. So, yeah. So they, you know, it's nice that they just jumped down there and help. And, you know, when that storm hit, me and the chief deputy went back into work. Not much that we can do, you know, but like, my role at that point was just taking all the media calls.
Yeah.
And that way dispatch didn't have to. I took care of that part. You know, Marty, the chief deputy, was working on logistics with, you know, do we need more deputies into work or don't we?
And I'm sure as like power poles were being blown down and traffic was becoming an issue. I mean, sure. I'm sure that was
it was hectic for a few hours. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So
you talked about the detectives that you've got on staff.
Sure.
I've seen in the paper where there's been, you know, in the past 6 months, probably half a dozen like child pornography type things.
Yes.
So do you have a detective or two that's assigned to that task, or where do they get their leads from?
Okay. So our area, our FBI office that covers our area is the Cleveland FBI office. Okay. They have agents that obviously have a lot more technology, equipment, resources than local government does, but they look for IP addresses that are attempting to download child pornography. We get notified, and it's called Internet Crimes Against Children. We call it the ICAC. So Internet Crimes Against Children, and they will send us tips of, you have this person at this address that is doing X, Y, and Z. And that's what starts, and then they're done with it.
Yep.
They kick that down. And Chris Hamburg is the lieutenant of the detectives. He will normally get those calls, and then either he will work the case or he'll assign it to Carla Bacher or Douglas Wepker, our other detectives. And, you know, depends on what each person's caseload is at the time. So whoever's kind of like next out the chute for the next call, he'll pass it off to them or help them work it. And it's kind of a team effort, because at some point, if it's legitimate information, it's going to require a search warrant, which needs to be done with more than a couple of people.
So you get this call that this IP address, which is in Montezuma, Ohio, let's say, is doing things that they aren't supposed to be doing.
Correct.
So then that guy will have the task of trying to confirm.
Yeah. That? And, you know, without going into details and giving up our trade secrets, I guess.
Sure.
It is pretty, by the time we get that information from the ICAC unit, it's pretty solid.
Yep.
I mean, it's, it's, hey, you need to go see Jack or Neil. This is what they've done. This is what we're seeing. X, Y, and Z. And it's, I don't want to say it, but it's a fairly easy case to solve most of the time, because you already have the evidence before you go knock on the door.
And once you get the search warrant, you say, give us your computer.
It's done. Yeah. So, you know, when you ask about that, I will put a plug in. You know, Coldwater PD recently assisted the task force, Fort Recovery, our detectives, and they have a detective that's specially trained for that type of activity. So he went and got, I don't know what he would say, certified in being able to look up that type of stuff. And he found a gentleman down here in Fort Recovery that was a little bit different scenario. I think that was more trying to lure somebody here, you know, for that type of activity that may not have been of age. And, you know, and that's where that arrest was made. So that came, you know, what a great job done by him, you know, but that took a little bit longer because, you know, it's just not handed to you. He worked that whole thing and got all the details and, you know, so, but, you know, it's, I feel like it's our job to get that type of activity out of our area, We got to keep our young people safe.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So, sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I looked on your app and I saw that there were 58 inmates.
Yes.
Okay. Is that pretty much a typical number?
No, or? No. I mean, actually that number's went up a little bit lately. We had been running in after COVID, and understand that when we tried to get everybody out of our jail that we could. And I don't want to say that any crime is tolerable, but if you were in there serving 3 days on a DUI, you're better off not serving your 3 days, because we didn't want to have that COVID running rampant, getting anybody sick in our jail. So COVID really put a damper on things for a while. But prior to COVID, you know, our numbers were anywhere on the low end for a day as 60 up into the, you know, low 90s. That number has never come back.
Yeah.
So,
I guess there's worse things in the world, right?
Yeah. But I mean, if you're asking me outright, I do think there's some people need to be in jail. So yeah. I'll just be frank about that. But at the end of the day, what the people that we have in there now, those numbers are slowly creeping up. So we do house a little bit for outside of county agencies. Yeah. And back then we did too. So I do see them numbers coming back, but a little bit. But, you know, I think it could certainly be some people that probably could get their time served in there. But you know, the nice thing is we do have the space right now. Dark County does not.
Yeah.
They are, you know, researching whether they should be building a new facility. And as we know, our citizens here supported us when we needed that and getting a new one built. So we, you know, we do get a little bit of extra money that comes back to Mercer County because we are housing their inmates. So,
and is that a financially beneficial thing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, one thing, and I'm going to get way off track here, but one thing that I love about being sheriff is I'm very active in the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association. So I get to interact with legislative, other meetings and stuff with other sheriffs across the state quite frequently. And you hear all the good, the bad, and the ugly that goes on. And I know people in this county say it all the time. We are so blessed. We are so blessed with the support of our citizens, with the great employees, the work ethic that we have around here. So that is very beneficial. But one of those things is just like the Mercer County commissioners. I mean, there are so many agencies out there that fight with their commissioners. I don't have to fight with them. I try to explain to them why I'm doing the things I'm doing, why we're spending the money where we're spending it, things that I think we can cut to help save money. They seem extremely appreciative of our efforts. So I think we're doing the right thing. But they have also given us agreement back in the day when we started housing out-of-county inmates is whatever money we bring in, X amount of goes into the general fund, X amount goes into what we call an outside account that we buy our extra equipment in, and then X amount goes into the jail fund so that it helps keep the jail funded.
Yeah.
You know, because like when we built that, a lot of all that housing outside of county inmates at that time, we helped try to use that to pay the jail off quicker. Once that was paid off, well, what happens is, you know, the cost of operating that thing has exploded. It's expensive to operate that. And some things we don't have control over. Medical for the inmates, which we're required by law to do. I got no control over medical expenses. And the food is up and down. And our jail staff, people working in the kitchen, do a great job. Well, let's buy hamburger here where it's low. And, you know, maybe we skip on the chicken patties that are up a little bit, you know, and they play with that all the time to try to keep those numbers down. But at the end of the day, by law, we can't serve a hamburger for every meal every day. If that's just what's cheaper, because there is a dietitian that has to approve our menu for our inmates, you know.
So you avoid the steak and lobster thing?
Yeah, we did. We avoided it. Yeah.
Well, that's just for the staff, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be sheriff very long if I'm serving steak and lobster on the taxpayer's dime, would I?
No. Which is probably why, you know, just kind of joking with that, but the commissioners know that you're not doing frivolous stuff just because you're what you ask for is something you really...
Well, they you know,
and they understand that.
And even when they raise questions, it's which is what their job is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's their job to raise questions. Their questions are always fair. They always give you a chance to explain it. But again, the whole county is blessed. Each and every office we have in this county, sure gives me the impression that they're trying, A, to serve the citizens the best they can. Do we make mistakes? Of course we do. We're human beings, but, you know, let's fix them. We own it. Let's move on. That's my motto. I mean, we're not beyond making mistakes. But these other office holders, treasurer, recorder, auditor, I mean, the prosecutor, you name it, the list goes on and on. They try to serve the citizens the best they can, as fiscally responsible as they can. But the biggest thing that a lot of us elected officials really don't have any control over is how everything's being done electronically now. Yeah. And IT services are extremely expensive. Yeah. I mean, they're terribly expensive. Yeah. And that's one thing that doesn't go down. You know, we buy cruisers just about every year. The price of cars, especially during COVID, went right through the roof, and they haven't come back down. And that's, you know, so everybody sees us driving around those cars. Those cars are knocking on $50,000 for one of our cruisers, but there's about another $40,000 worth of equipment that's put in there with the cage and the cameras and the computers and the radio and, you know, the shotguns and the rifles and all the locking mechanisms and all the equipment they need for crash scenes. It's expensive, you know, very expensive. So
I'll tell you what, we're going to take another break. We're going to come back and talk about a little bit about the bank fraud thing that happened.
Sure.
So we'll be back right after this.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Klingshern & Sons Trucking in Burkittsville. For over 50 years, Klingshern & Sons Trucking has been providing a safe workplace for their employees and maintains integrity, fairness, and honesty with their customers and business partners. With their dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers, they provide local and long-haul transportation with on-time delivery. Learn more online about Klingshern & Sons and their employment opportunities at klingshernandsons.com. Their phone number is 937-338-5000.
We thank Klingshern & Sons Trucking for supporting the Tribe 107.3.
Tonight's Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3 is supported by Hull Brothers Case IH, serving farmers and families for more than 125 years. Located in Fort Recovery, Hull Brothers offers new and used tractors from Case IH and Kubota, plus parts and service to keep your equipment running strong. They also carry mowers and outdoor gear from Grasshopper, Cub Cadet, and Toro. Learn more at hullbros.com or call 419-375-2827. Thanks to Hull Brothers for supporting Fort Recovery Athletics and today's broadcast on the Tribe.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Miracle Lanes in Fort Recovery, offering bowling, family fun, and a place for the community to gather. Hey, Harry Carey, tell us more.
Hey, they've got lanes for parties and celebrations and open bowling on the weekend. In the kitchen, it's wings, pizzas, sandwiches, wraps, and subs, plus a pizza wing and salad bar buffet every Friday at lunch. For more information, the number's 419-375-4274.
We thank Miracle Lanes and Fort Recovery for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Well, during Lent, the Wendoline Sports Club will again be having their popular all-you-can-eat fish fry every Friday night from 4:30 to 7:30. Along with their famous freshly cooked fish, they have French fries, salad, and several other great side dishes. Bring the whole family. Come early, stay late. Meet your friends at the Wendoline Sports Club every Friday evening during Lent for their all-you-can-eat fish fry. Great food, great company. Wendoline Sports Club's fish fry every Friday during Lent from 4:30 to 7:30.
We're back talking to Mr. Sheriff Doug Timmerman from the Mercer County Sheriff's Office. And so, Doug, you know, one of the kind of a neat thing that hit the papers, and I say neat because stuff like that doesn't happen in Fort Recovery very often. That was front page news for us. But there was a couple of characters that were trying to commit fraud in some of our local banks.
Correct.
And I know you can't go into the details, but how does a couple from New York, New Jersey, yeah, end up in Salina and Fort Recovery trying to do stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good question, how they end up here. I will tell you that, you know, this case is being headed up in a joint effort between the agencies involved, you know, Fort Recovery, Salina, Coldwater, and then we had a bank out in the county, obviously. And so all of our agencies had a little hand in that. But at the end of the day, you know, kudos to Officer Bird, because he's the one that found him here in town. Okay. Everybody was looking for him, but he found him. Yep. And I found one of them, I should say. I think we all know that it was a multi-person effort. Yep. But this gentleman's got a history, a lengthy history, of doing the same thing, and has wanted in quite a few places, is my understanding, a couple different states for doing this stuff. And it sounds like this has been a lifestyle for this gentleman for a while. So you know, he got caught here. Obviously, he's been caught other times because it's on his criminal history sheet. But, you know, this time he picked the wrong area. And yeah. I know a little bit more of the details, and I certainly don't want to ruin the case by any means.
Sure.
But I will tell you just what, you know, Don did down here in Fort Recovery. It's no other way to put it other than it was just good police work. I mean, he had paid attention, made some phone calls, and those phone calls panned out for him and got some lead. Yeah, so kudos to him. Kudos to all the other agencies that, you know, were able to. And really, let's be honest, you got to give it to the bank tellers in this county.
Yeah.
They did some good work, because maybe this guy picked the wrong area because everybody knows everybody here.
Yeah.
And the bank tellers probably know who their customers are. And when things smelled kind of bad and looked kind of, they took notice and got law enforcement involved. And you know, for lack of better terms, we got a bad guy in jail, and he needs a...
So will a case like that, since it's kind of a cross-state type thing, will he most likely be sent to someplace and face federal type thing?
Well, I guess it could depend. I mean, you know, you always have it, you know, the crimes are always a little bit different when you start doing, let's say, a pattern of corrupt activity that can enhance the charge that you've been, you know, make it a higher level felony. Certainly the feds could get involved if this is a multi-state issue, which it's a very likelihood that it is, because he's got charges from other states doing the same thing. You know, what blows my mind and is very frustrating is, you know, this guy was on an ankle monitor, and, you know, for being out of jail for the same thing. Well, we can see how well that worked, you know. So
is he out on bail or bond or anything like that?
From us right now?
Yeah.
No, he's still in our facility. Even if he made bail or bond tomorrow, I think there's other agencies that want him. Somebody would just come pick him up.
Yeah.
So he's not going to, he can't post bond and disappear.
He can post bond. He ain't disappearing.
Yeah.
If he posts bond, all that does is force him down the line to the next facility that wants him. So, yeah. You know, and again, I'll go back to the area we live in. People pay attention. They care about their neighbors. You know, they know who their neighbors are. And good local, you know, good police work done by people around here. And you know, for lack of better terms, don't come to the county and mess around, because people here look out for each other.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and you know, these bank tellers in whichever town, you know, they probably know every last name.
I would imagine
97% of the people in, you know, that are in town.
Yeah. And well, it you know, not only did they not let their customers get frauded out of this deal, they had some good information. And you know, normally speaking, when this kind of stuff happens, you hope that it no money's lost. But four attempts and four separate banks with four separate bank tellers basically passed the test. You know what I mean? And kudos to them, you know. And then they just make our job that much easier when they give us that good of information.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. And that's what
let's just talk about maybe the first one over in Salina. Mm-hmm. So did, when they tried to do this, did she say just a second and go back somewhere and make a phone call?
I think there was some of that going on.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there was, like I said, they could smell that something wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was some,
and they were able to do that without the the perpetrator getting suspicious? Or,
I think maybe the perpetrator knew the gig was up at one of the banks and took off before they ever got the answer. They just all did a fantastic job. And let's face it, I mean, it's a crazy world, and that's got to be hard for them to, you know, maybe explain to somebody that something doesn't look right, or buy some time to look into something because you just don't know what people are going to do nowadays.
And some of it probably has something to do with the bank's general policy of always call the person by name. Or if you can't think of their name right away, at least associate it with something so you know what's going on. And you know, even if there's not any crime going on, if you can remember what the person is or where they work, you've taken care of, that's several steps you don't have to go through.
Absolutely.
So you just know your customers.
Absolutely. And it's good customer service to do that. I mean, they really did a good job. And, you know, it wasn't all the same branches of banks either. I mean, so they all did well. So.
So I noticed on the Sheriff app on my phone that, like, there's 278 outstanding warrants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a absolutely know-nothing guy, I'm thinking, well, cripes, that's a lot of warrants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So those are people out there that if, like, they walked in the door right now, you'd put them under arrest.
That'd be correct. If they were one of the outstanding warrants, Now you, I might just take to jail just because that could be fun, and Neil would pay me for that, right?
Handsomely.
Yes.
So, like, what are most of those?
So it's a vast, vast majority of them are probably misdemeanor type warrants, which are, you didn't pay for your speeding ticket, you didn't show up for court for your stop sign violation or driving under suspension. There's a handful of them or more that are child support suspensions. You didn't pay your child support and you may live in another state. It's all over the board. I mean, and are there a couple of them that we have that are very serious ones? Absolutely. Those are probably crimes that have been committed that we, through the investigation, found out who the suspect is, and we can't find them.
Yeah.
But we have enough information to go file the warrant. For instance, I think we briefly talked about this one other time when I was down here, the Bones case in Salina, on the lake. Once we had that case solved and knew we were going to arrest a lady that day or within the pending weeks, we filed that warrant on her and had the warrant. So there would have been an outstanding warrant for her until we went and got our hands on her. Okay. Now, there's a little bit of difference in some of that stuff. Sometimes we don't necessarily put it in a computer right away, which would you would see it on an app, because we want it to be a surprise when we get there to get her, because we don't want her to know that she's wanted for murder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, at some point, and to be honest with you, I just talked to one of our civil deputies today, Deputy Forstoff, when he was telling me how he had been to Van Wert twice for two different warrants, been up to Paulding County for a warrant. Our transport guy comes in the morning. He's generally got somewhere to go to pick somebody up on a warrant. That could include, you know, we get a notice tonight that so-and-so's wanted in Florida, and now we got to set up, you know, the travel of airlines to go down and fly and get them and, you know, bring them back here. And we have been to Texas a few times, Florida a lot. That seems like a landing spot for people for some reason. To Vegas a couple times, New Mexico. I mean, so it just depends we're not going to fly down to Florida to pick you up, Jack, if you didn't pay your speeding ticket.
Yeah.
But if you had a sex offense case or a felonious assault, we're coming to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it's a felony level crime, we are going to go get you out of state. And sometimes we just have to justify, is it cheaper to drive to go get them, or is it too far and it's cheaper to go fly down?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we have to justify.
Yep.
Yeah.
So. And, you know, we talked about the 58 inmates. It seems like the demographics of who's in jail, mm-hmm. and what they're in jail for has changed over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, before we get into that, let's take another break, Neil, because I think we got to squeeze one in and then.
Yep. And there's one more before we wrap things up. Yeah.
So, very good. Okay. Perfect. Okay. So yeah. We'll talk about that right after this.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Recovery Insurance Agency Incorporated. As an independent agency, Fort Recovery Insurance works with providers like Buckeye State Mutual, Nationwide, Progressive, Indiana Farmers, Donegal, Ohio Mutual, Acuity, Safeco, and Hagerty, offering insurance options for vehicles, homes, farms, life, and health. We thank Fort Recovery Insurance Agency for supporting the Tribe 107.3, WFRC, LP.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Reasoner Energy Products in Coldwater, installing and servicing products from Train HVAC, Generac Generators, and Mitsubishi Electric Ductless Systems. Reasoner Energy Products is proud to support community growth through quality service and local commitment. Learn more by visiting their location at 445 Hardin Street in Coldwater or online at ReasonerEnergyProducts.com. Their phone number is 419-678-4858.
We thank Reasoner Energy Products for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Wendell's Barbecue at the St. Joe store.
Wendell's Barbecue is open Tuesday through Saturday and serves pizzas, gourmet burgers, smoked brisket, pulled pork creations, and hand-cut fries cooked in beef tallow. Wendell's also features daily food specials, offers catering for events of all sizes, and operates a mobile food truck that appears at locations around the area. Find more on the Facebook page or call 419-375-4074.
We thank Wendell's Barbecue at St. Joe for supporting community radio on the Tribe 107.3 WFRC LP. The Fort Recovery CIO to Zeis Community Garage Sales will be held April 16th, 17th, and 18th this year. Registration for garage sales is open until Wednesday, March 25th. To register your garage sale and get your sale on their map, be sure to get your registration form from any CIO to Zeis member or go to their Facebook page, Fort Recovery Community Garage Sales, and download the form from your computer. Registration fees are used for advertising the sale and printing the maps. All proceeds are used for community projects and improvements. Again, Fort Recovery's community garage sales will be held April 16th through the 18th. Be sure to get your sale on the list.
We're back talking to Sheriff Doug Timmerman from the Mercer County Sheriff's Office. And Doug, we were just talking about the demographics of the people in jail. And it just seems like when I looked at it just this afternoon versus if I would have looked at it 10 to 15 years ago, that it's changed pretty drastically.
It has, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, like I think there's only three people in there that are under the age of 25.
Okay, yeah.
And there's only a handful of females compared to 15 years ago. So what's changed?
The one thing that I think has changed the most is back in 2010, for a handful of years, the big heroin epidemic. Not to say that females don't commit crimes, right? They do. But the heroin epidemic, when, I'm not putting this all on them, but a lot of boyfriend, girlfriend teams got arrested out of that. They got, you know, if the boyfriend got hooked on heroin, right along with that went the girlfriend, which now makes them, you know, and that was such an addictive drug. And along with the drug use came, you know, that they're so addicted, they're sick, they're not going to work, they don't have any income. So now we start stealing everything to have money to buy the drugs. And so they were getting jammed up that way as well. So the heroin epidemic, because there were so many of them dying from that the drug of choice actually switched for many years to methamphetamine then. So when meth became a thing, and it still is, but now we've seen a change in where cocaine is making a strong comeback. So I think to answer your question, there was a lot of females arrested back in that time because of the heroin epidemic. And the general public may not know this, but there was a lot of people in Mercer County that died from that. I mean, a lot. And, you know, I used to read the paper every day and, you know, 32-year-old blah, blah, blah passes away. We knew why they passed away, but the general public did not. And it was a very dangerous drug, very dangerous, very addictive. And we still have people that are addicted to that. Don't get me wrong. Sure. And they have an extreme amount of medical problems caused by that. So when they come to jail, they're very sick people. But, you know, those people now that were 18, 19, 20, 22-year-old females like you were talking are now 30-year-old females, still maybe not addicted to the heroin as much anymore. Maybe it's another drug, but still committing the crimes because to them that was is a way of life or something that they haven't been able to get past. And, you know, you talk about the demographics. There is a lot of that, Jack, that's changed. But there's also some of it that hasn't, which is the repeat offenders that come back time and time again. And, you know, that's one thing I've been kind of open about. And as I was running for sheriff or even being sheriff, which is I do not like, there is not a program that can fix everybody's problem. Okay. And we, in the as society and as government and as funding, we do put a lot of money into treatment programs and rehab programs. If somebody wants to get themselves out of a hole, there's plenty of opportunities to do that. But at the end of the day, we lack in this society of holding people accountable for their mistakes. And even as parents, sometimes I think we fail in going, you know, I can never touch my kid. I'll go to jail. If your kid needs a spanking, the sheriff's not taking you to jail for giving a spanking. You know what I mean? That's just not going to happen. Now, can't get out there and beat your children, right? There, and everybody knows that line.
It does seem like there's more people that are on that list right now that are in there because of domestic violence.
Sure.
Is that an increasing thing?
Domestic violence, in my opinion, and it's strictly my opinion, I haven't seen an increase or decrease in that. And when I started in law enforcement in the early 90s, the laws were not what they are in domestic violence now. Back then, if you know you had a spouse that said, you know, I don't want anything done, which basically means you don't have a victim.
Yeah.
You can't make an arrest, which all changed in full transparency. It all changed after the O.J. Simpson thing happened. That's when the laws all got changed. If the law enforcement officer has probable cause to believe that domestic violence has occurred, he is required by law to arrest the primary offender. Even if both of you are fighting, the law says the primary offender. And that may not be the first one who touched somebody. It's the primary aggressor that gets arrested. But
it should be the male in 95%.
It could be. We have you'd be surprised how many females get arrested in domestic violence.
They're so damn mean.
I sure hope my wife's not listening. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you didn't agree with him, so you're okay.
I'm safe so far. So we have went out there where we can't determine the primary aggressor, and we arrest them both.
Yeah.
So, in domestic violence is different now because of that. So have the arrest went up a little bit since the early 90s? Yeah, because the law requires that there shall be arrested. But I don't think that number's, it ebbs drastic. And flows a little bit, but it's not drastic.
Some of it be because more of it's being reported?
Yep, absolutely.
Not that, you know, there's more of it being done. Ago, but
nothing got done about that, you know. Yeah. So it was just a different time.
Yeah. Yep.
How often do you find that there's alcohol involved
in domestic violence? Yeah. It's either alcohol, drugs.
Yeah.
I want to say the majority of the time. And then sometimes you get the one off. Sometimes you have the domestic that you're going to go out to, and that you really don't want to make an arrest on because you know it's a good family, but either financial stress got in the way or medical stress in the family got in the way and probably said things, done things, threatened or did something that is out of the norm, but we're still going to make that arrest. But you just know in the back of your mind, you're probably not going to end up back at that house again. Our domestic violences that we deal with are a lot of repeats.
Realistically, from a deputy standpoint, isn't that probably the most dangerous?
It is.
Call that they have.
They will any training class you go to. Domestic violence is the most dangerous call to go to for any law enforcement officer.
But it's so emotional.
It's emotionally charged from the beginning to the end, and it just changes so quick because, you know, if we got called to your house tonight and you know one or the other had assaulted each other, you're obviously upset with each other. Yeah. What happens is that all changes when, law enforcement gets involved and now we're going to arrest you. Then she doesn't want you arrested. And then, you know, she's jumping in to keep us from, you know, and then maybe we assault officers.
And there's already anger
that's
involved.
Yep.
So then the deputy shows up and it can either deflate.
That's exactly it. It can either escalate or de-escalate. Obviously, we try to get our folks to de-escalate as much as possible. But that some people just in those situations are unreasonable, you know, and it's tough.
So I want to touch. I know that you wanted to plug.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I'm a big member of the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association. As a matter of fact, I came back from Columbus today and sitting on the board meeting and legislative meetings. So I do a lot with the legislation with the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association, sit on that committee, have for a few years. That's where we get to say our piece on what laws are being presented that they're trying to pass. And we'll either oppose or support those bills. And sometimes we just monitor them. But there is the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association has a large presence down at the State House. So we have a voice down there, which I think is great because there's some laws that are, and just to be frank, are absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. Some of them that we're really pushing to get passed that we know would benefit our citizens and benefit us. So with that, every 4 years, the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association does this thing called prospecting where they ask members of Mercer County if they want to be associate members of the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association. This is their chance to do that. So this year is Mercer County's year. Us and 22 other counties will be. So I just wanted to throw it out there because this is not a scam. I put out Facebook and news releases today. It's not a scam. I will tell you, this is only going to come to our citizens by mail. If you get anything other than a mailing, that is a scam. This is strictly done by mail. If you don't like it, you can throw that piece of paper away. If you want to be a member, it's $25 or more, however much you choose. You get a little bit of life and dismemberment insurance that goes along with that. You get to become an associate member. So if you want to be a part of that, we use that funding for training for the sheriffs and deputies in Ohio and to help with legislative needs when we're trying to get certain bills and passed down at the Senate. And
will it get Bob out of his next speeding
absolutely ticket? Not. Absolutely not. Yeah. If you get one from me, you know it's not true. So
I'm perfect with the new sheriff.
I love it.
All right. I like it.
Yeah.
So, Doug, I'll tell you what, we've touched on about everything.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
One last question.
Sure. Okay.
Yep. Let's take a break and I'll give my one last question. Hey. We'll be
Boars Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Boars, or Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Boars Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Boars Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Site Fuel in Fort Recovery. Right on the corner of Fort Site Street and State Route 49, Fort Site Fuel is your local stop for top-tier gasoline and ultra-low sulfur diesel. It's self-serve, open 24/7, and their pumps take all the major credit cards. Easy and convenient, day or night.
We thank Fort Site Fuel for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from CSG Consulting. Asia, they help businesses and individuals build smart strategies using financial modeling and analysis. CSG assists with keeping an eye on performance, managing business dashboards, and analyzing budget differences. They also help adjust strategies and manage change because what worked before might not work tomorrow. Their focus is on understanding all the moving parts in your operation to keep everything balanced and on track. You can learn more at csgconsulting.us or call 419-852-4049 or 614-551-4631. Thank you, CSG Consulting, for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
On Sunday, April 12th, you can help support your local heroes at the Fort Recovery Firefighters Association's annual Barbecue Chicken Dinner Fundraiser. From 4 to 6 p.m. at the station, enjoy a delicious barbecue chicken dinner for just $10. It's drive-through or carry-out only, perfect for a quick meal for the whole family. Get your tickets now from your local firefighters, and thank you for your continued support of Fort Recovery Firefighters. That's the Fort Recovery Firefighters Association's annual barbecue chicken dinner, serving on Sunday, April 12th, from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Fire Hall. Fire Hall.
I'm pointing at you, Jack.
Oh, then it must be time. There we go.
Be time.
We're back. Talking to Sheriff Doug Timmerman. Doug, it has been a quick hour, fella.
Yeah, yeah, it has, and I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah. So,
So as you look at the rest of 2026, what's the biggest challenge?
Obviously finances. I think we're doing good on that. That's my job to keep track of that. But the one thing that I've just implemented that was a goal of mine is to try to put a stop to all the driving under suspension, because along with that comes people who are not insured when they're driving under suspension, causing accidents. And then the victim, who they may have hit or hurt or God forbid anything worse, does not have any coverage. And then that goes back on the victim to get their own car repaired, for their own medical bills. And I just think that's extremely unfair when you shouldn't have been out on the road anyhow. So I started a program a couple of weeks ago. Any DUS is driving under suspensions or no operator's license we get anymore. Those vehicles are automatically getting towed, and they're getting locked up in our storage building behind the sheriff's office. And for you to get that back, you're required to reimburse us for our tow bill. You're required to show proof of insurance on the vehicle. You're required to have a valid operator's license, and you have to show proof of ownership of that vehicle. Since last week, we've already had three of them that we've towed in up there. So I'm hoping that's going to be a success. Obviously, the goal is to keep these people from driving under suspension. But when we used to hand them the tickets, you don't need a license to drive a car. You just need a car and a set of keys. So I figured if they're not going to pay attention to the law, we'll take their car away from them. And then you're going to have to show insurance and all that stuff to come get it back. And we have a thing called wrongful entrustment, that if you're allowing somebody to drive your car under suspension, you get served with that notice when you come up there to pick up your car. If you let your wife drive it, you're going to be noticed going, she didn't have a license. The next time you do it, you're getting a ticket too. So,
and at some point, there's going to be a hell of a sheriff's auction.
Well, yeah, it could be. Yeah, I mean, but you're not talking 2025 Cadillacs that we're towing in either. So, yeah.
I probably should. Yeah. Well, Doug, I'll tell you
thank
what.
Thank you, guys. Yeah.
I really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
It's been very, very informative
and fun.
Yeah.
Hey, one more time.
Sure.
Just kind of go over the junior deputy, whatever that
is,
and how people can enroll in that.
So if they want to join the junior deputy program, you can either do it online through our website, or you can call up to the sheriff's office at 419-586-7724 and ask to speak with the junior deputy advisor, and we'll be sure to get them in contact with that. And then if they're juvenile, we will have to sit down with them and their parents to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Fantastic. So, Neil, let's have everybody stay tuned. We may have the greatest sports talk ever coming up. Right, Bobby?
Or the worst.
Huh?
Or the worst.
Ben showed up. It might be bad.
Well, he doesn't have a microphone yet. So.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll let him talk.
So stay tuned for sports talk right after these messages.
Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show is being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show. Thank you.